Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to Condensed Histories, the podcast that takes pop culture and reveals the real history underneath. I'm your host, Jem Taduchu, and what we're doing this time round is Donald J. Trump.
Brace yourself, Rodney.
Now, to kick things off, because you're going to have opinions on this guy, my perspective on this is I'm going to look at him in a neutral, historical, analytical viewpoint, which will mean there are times when I absolutely lay into him, but there'll be times when you might be thinking, I think you should go for the jugular again, Jem, because that's partly the point of my thesis by looking at him. Now, why am I talking about him? He is obviously current affairs. How can you talk about history and pop culture, etc.? Well, the reason for this is because, as I said, it's interesting if you take all of the heat out of the conversation and instead look at him the same way you might look at William the Conqueror or George Washington. You get quite a different viewpoint on the guy. And secondly, he makes no sense if you look at him purely from the perspective of political history, because he came from nowhere from that perspective. Now, why am I not doing an episode on Joe Biden? Because he does make sense from political historical perspective. He had been up on Capitol Hill as an elected candidate for decades before he became the vice president of the United States, so it was almost natural at some point he would take a swing at the presidency. That is as traditional as Eisenhower or Grover Cleveland or whoever. The point here is, with Trump, he's just changed all the rules, and it's fascinating to look at, particularly, as I said, if you look at it from the dispassionate perspective, but also if you look at it from the pop culture perspective. So to be clear on this, if you want to use virtually any metric, yes, the economy grew under Donald Trump, but it then collapsed at the end because of COVID. And also because of COVID, more Americans died faster under his presidency than any other one. Plus the two impeachments, plus January 6th, plus all the lies. There can be no doubt that if you are going to do a list of all-time worst presidents, however you want to stack it up, he's at the bottom of the list. Now, to his followers going, oh, you're so unfair, what makes him at the top of the list? Apart from his great speeches that you really like, what actual evidence do you have? I know we seem to be in a post-truth world, but that's the reality. So again, I'm using historical precedent to sometimes give him a bit of a pass, but also absolutely condemn him where appropriate. If you go back and ask people in the 1980s to name famous business people, people would have had to scratch their heads pretty hard, apart from one Donald J. Trump.
Excuse me, where's the lobby?
Down the hall and to the left.
Thanks.
He's been part of popular culture. He's been in the mainstream for decades. And if you like, this is where we have to look at how America has woven its perception of business onto the rest of the world. If you were to go back into the 19th century, the most powerful economy in the world was Britain's because of the empire. But this wasn't an empire that was largely constructed through endless amounts of military conquest. And if you're going to turn around and say, well, what about this war? What about that war? Yes, but compare it to the likes of the Mongol Empire or the Roman Empire. The whole point of those empires was conquest, violence. And the thing about particularly the British Empire is it was so spread out across the world. So it meant that the connections had to be maritime. And that led to trade. So if you were to ask what was business best practice in 1880, you would have had some old-fashioned ideas such as women shouldn't be in business. But it would have been about sensible policies, only getting out loans when you can absolutely afford to repay. It was about gradual increase of efficiency and about looking into new markets and innovation. Whereas today, that's part of business, but it's seen as very old-fashioned and stuffy. There is far more gambling involved in business. It's the sort of thing where you will buy a place using borrowed money. So I'll use a real example. Manchester United got bought by the Glazers, an American guy, or I think brothers, and they bought it with borrowed money. So then they had to up the prices and do everything in Manchester United possible because they had to pay back the loan. Whereas if this had happened in 1880, you would have had the money to buy Manchester United and then you buy Manchester United. But this whole thing about buying stuff on borrowed money and so on and so forth, this is America. You sell the vision. It's pure, I'm going to argue, bad salesmanship because you're trying to inflate the value rather than outright say, this is worth this for this much money and this is how it can help you. Now she's like, oh, this is amazing. This is great. This is glorious. This razzmatazz, this hustle is very American. And because America became the biggest economy in the 20th century and is still the biggest economy to this day, it's heavily influenced business practices, and Donald Trump didn't invent any of it. What Donald Trump is, he's a symptom. He's not a cause. And of course, just like his ancestors, be they literal or be they, in terms of the business world, his ancestors from America, they all are about, we've got this vision, we think this is going to be great, this is the biggest, the best, the brightest, the boldest. All of this hyperbole with no actual backing. And it means that when you think of, again, before he got into politics, if you think of an American business person, Donald Trump fits the bill. He's always dressed smart. He's always in a suit. He is a fast talker. And he has charm. This is the thing that you're going to perhaps push back on. But you don't get to where you are, particularly in an election, if you have zero charm. Don't believe me? Ask Al Gore. Ask Gordon Brown in Britain. These guys are smart. They're conscientious. They've done many good things, but they have got no idea how to excite and enthuse an audience. That has power. Now, I've done a whole episode on public speaking, and as I said, the only thing that you know from somebody who is a good public speaker is they are good at that one thing. It doesn't tell you about their morality or their brains or anything like that. Donald Trump has been heavily criticized, quite rightly, once he's gone into the world of politics, of having rambling, pointless, silly speeches. And you're right. If you're going to compare him to the eloquent, structured speeches of Bill Clinton or of Emmanuel Macron or of David Cameron, you know, I'm just picking random people, Angela Merkel, all these people are traditional politicians. You may either agree or disagree with their politics, but you know where they come from, and they know how to structure a speech. Whereas Donald Trump, it's freestyle jazz, but the point is he is working off the audience. He's got more in common with a band on stage than he does with a politician on stage. He's feeding off the energy. He throws out what is, in essence, his catchphrases, his one-liners, and the crowds love it for it. And whereas the intelligentsia and the more serious press outlets will turn up their nose and go, oh, for heaven's sakes. Yeah, but the thing is, though, there are 500 of you and there are 20,000 of the people who are going to vote for him. That's how you win an election. So he came through social media. In the words of Warren Buffett, another famous American business person, and he is a more traditional business person, he has pointed out that throughout Donald Trump's entire career, if he just put what his dad had given him as an inheritance into a wide range of stocks and bonds, he would have made more money than all of his wheeling dealing. And it's worth pointing out that Donald Trump has been bankrupt 5 times. That's not the sign of a genius in terms of business. Now, I think that this is sometimes used as a weapon against him, and it is worth pointing out, you get someone like Steve Jobs also ruining Apple. At one point, his ego was way ahead of where the actual company was. So all business people can sometimes get too big for their boots, believe their own hype, and make mistakes. But the problem with Donald Trump is he has never once shown humility. And this is something that a lot of people like, particularly in business people. You get these autobiographies, and they quite often start off with a really down time in their life or talking about how hard their childhood was. Donald Trump has never explained anything tough in his life ever because, to be fair to him, it hasn't been a tough life. Born to a multimillionaire family, he was so rich and influential that he managed to get out of the draft for Vietnam.
I'm sure it was better than my plan to get out of this by pretending to be mad. I mean, who would have noticed another madman around here?
He's never done a hard day's work in his life, apart from the salesmanship, in which case he does put a lot of energy into that. Any product in the Trump range, he never admits any errors. He always turns around and says how great they are, how wonderful they were, how he's really unlucky about this kind of thing. It is worth remembering, just as he was coming in as president, he had to settle out of court for Trump University, which was a scam. I think legally I can say that because he had to pay out for it. It wasn't as advertised. False advertising, this isn't good. He got caught on that occasion, and he's the sort of person, and you get this in business, people who go up to what is acceptable in the law and then perhaps poke at it a little bit, because nobody wins all the time by only playing by 100% of the rules, belt and braces, don't take any risks. That's a very boring way to live life. You always have to roll the dice a little bit in life. I became a freelancer 10 years ago. That could have gone badly wrong for me, but I realized it was the perfect time to do it, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. But it might have failed. I might have had to go back and become a worker drone in an office organization, ruining the day. Why did my business fail? If you take no risks, you're not necessarily going to get ahead in life, but also at the same time, there are such things as mitigating your risks, understanding what's likely to happen in terms of risk. Donald Trump's not so great at that. This is a man who managed to lose money with a casino, where people just give you money for games of chance that statistically they are highly unlikely to win, and he lost money on that. So, once we've had his cameo in Home Alone 2, once we get into the TV show The Apprentice, which is what really brought him back, his businesses, none of them were doing particularly well, but he suddenly became a household name with his catchphrase, "You're fired." And this was turned into other countries. I used to watch the Alan Sugar version of The Apprentice in the UK. It's still running. I just gave up on it years ago. And it's fascinating because it's a game show. But it's a game show about business as opposed to singing or trivia or your knowledge of movies or what have you. This is all about an imperfect mirror being held up to various different business principles and then played for entertainment. The thing that young people don't get when they watch The Apprentice is, of course, there can be only one winner. The reality is, in business, if you do well, your whole company grows. You don't have to. If you started the same time as Sam, well, it doesn't mean that Sam is your mortal enemy. Sam and you both have the capability to rise through the ranks, learn from each other, help each other. But that's not the way it tends to work in The Apprentice. And indeed, the creators of The Apprentice have been on record saying now that they've seen what's happened with Donald Trump, with hindsight, they would never have done it. And maybe they got a point. But the thing is that Trump really started to take an interest in politics with Barack Obama. He took issue with that. We could argue it's racist, but he started spreading conspiracy theories, and he really hasn't stopped since. Now, I wrote in 2016, The American Presidents in 100 Facts, and I start pre-George Washington, pointing out how the colonies and the rebels actually started off and how remarkably they managed to fight a war of independence by committee. That's very rarely something that's going to work, but it did for America. Well done, America. Then we get to George Washington, so on and so forth. And what I found interesting is once I was past Eisenhower, I could just feel people's breath on the back of my neck. I could just feel people getting a bit amped up about these people. And I went through them. I said good things about Richard Nixon. I said bad things about Bill Clinton, because again, I was using the same disciplines as history towards these people. And nobody's bad all the time. Because we've got the pop culture, and because Trump recognized this pop culture through The Apprentice, through Twitter, he was able to reach out to millions of people that if he'd just stayed in the realms of business only, rather than as a business entertainer, if he'd tried to run in 2016 and he had the same public image as Warren Buffett, he would have lost. He wouldn't have even been the candidate for the Republicans. But he understood how to talk to people. And this is something you have to give him respect for. And when it came to Hillary Clinton, I had to sit there, and the last one was about the election of 2016. Read the book if you want to see how I did with that. But the point is that Hillary Clinton, as a friend of mine said, there's nothing more dangerous in politics when you feel like it's this person's time. Because that's the intelligentsia. That's the people who day-to-day worry about politics and the economy and stuff like that. That is not how the general public think. And the reason why Donald Trump winning in 2016 was such a surprise for the rest of the world is it was never properly explained to the rest of the world how much America didn't like Hillary Clinton. And so this is one of the situations where if anybody other than Hillary had been running, if Joe Biden indeed had been running in 2016, he probably would have beaten Donald Trump. And let's be clear, all politicians, all political parties lie or at the very least misspeak, okay? And sometimes it's because you're asked a question and you're trying to pull something out the back of your head and you misremember it. I'm going to say that's not really a crime.
So how much would 10,000 police officers cost?
Well, if we recruit the 10,000 police men and women over a four-year period, we believe it'll be about £300,000.
£300,000?
Sorry,
10,000 police officers? What are you paying them?
No, I mean, sorry.
How much will they cost?
As the saying goes, there are lies, there are damn lies, and then there are statistics. So if you want to find a stat to prove that the economy's growing, you could probably find one and say, actually, you know, during my time as president or prime minister, you'll see that manufacturing has gone up by 4%. I'm a big boon to the economy. Aren't I great? Now, there may be the manufacturing's grown by 4%, but every other part of the economy has shrunk. So actually, we're in recession right now. But the thing is, you can cherry pick this stuff. Donald Trump just flat out lied. And the warnings were right at the beginning when, because of his ego, he wanted to claim more people saw him being inaugurated in the Capitol than Barack Obama. And the photos clearly showed otherwise. And this was the beginning. The thing about Donald Trump, the thing about social media, is democracy was not created for this sort of pressures to be put on it. Nowadays, with AI and deep fakes and social media, you can spread lies immediately. And whereas you can try and shut it down, you can try and say that's fake news, you've literally got the President of the United States talking about real facts as fake news because they don't fit his narrative and just flat out lying. And you get things like Politico that used to measure how many lies were said in political speeches. It was a good way to show whether somebody like George W. Bush had got his facts right or not. They pointed out, well, actually, this is wrong about the economy and so on and so forth. So you'd get different lengths of Pinocchio nose shows you how big the lie was. But with Donald Trump, the system just broke because he was still selling. This is what gives salespeople bad name. And if you listen to my Wolf of Wall Street episode, I am a trainer of salespeople. It's what I do for a day job. And I'm telling you right now, somebody like Donald Trump or somebody like the Wolf of Wall Street, they are great on TV. They'd be fired in a heartbeat if they were to join a company, because salespeople need to explain how the product or service works. They can't just lie, okay? Because people realize that you're lying and then they'll never work with you again. If you just want the basic reasons as to why salespeople shouldn't lie, that's it, all right? But in the case of Donald Trump, he can't get fired. He's president of the United States. So he just goes off on one. And yes, you can cherry pick, not even that much cherry picking. You can absolutely take his speeches and show that what he's talking about is drivel. It's barely coherent sentences, and it's clearly nonsense. It's making hysterical claims about various ethnic groups or various political scenarios. And these are demonstrably and easily fact-checked to be proven none of this happened, or at least if it happened, it didn't happen anything like the way that Donald Trump did. But he's not talking to the Democrats. He's talking to his base, and his base loves him. Right now, there is 30% of the United States, when Donald Trump has said,
where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay?
He's not wrong. Those 30% would happily mitigate anything. And the question is why? Because these people tend to be poor, they tend to be quite religious, and they tend to be fiscally conservative. When you put all those three things together, these people would not be allowed and couldn't afford a slot in his Mar-a-Lago golf club. He would be mortified if some of these people put their money together to get one person to now be a member of Mar-a-Lago. Not acceptable. He doesn't know what a hard day's work is in his entire life, so he can't actually relate to a coal miner in West Virginia or a steel worker in Detroit. But the point is, he says what they want. And this is where I can start putting in history. And I don't like it when people start saying, oh, you know, this is the same thing Hitler did and blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, let's break that down. Hitler was a monster who killed millions of people because of his ideologies and started the largest war in human history. He also had a plan. If you had read My Struggle, Mein Kampf, which he wrote in the 1920s, you could see all this stuff coming. What did Donald Trump write 20 years before he got into politics? The Art of the Deal, and that was ghostwritten. At least Adolf Hitler had the courtesy to write his own book. But the point is, if you turn around, just you and him, Donald Trump, in a room and say, okay, talk me through your fiscal policy as a new president, he would be stumped in terms of explaining that to you. If you asked him what the foreign policy, he'll say a catchy slogan, America first, or make America great again. But if you say, what does that actually mean? Talk me through the economic principles. Which levers of your foreign diplomacy are you going to be pulling? And why? What is the logic behind it? Somebody like Hitler could actually answer those questions. Trump can't. Trump can't believe his luck. There is a pretty good, how do you actually prove this stuff? But this absolutely makes sense. The best outcome for Trump in 2016 is if it had been close, but he'd lost, because he could have spent the next 4 years on Fox News as a pundit saying, well, I would have done it differently. I would have done it better. I would have done a better job. But then he actually had to run the country. And he always talks about the stock market, and the economy did grow because he took away a lot of restrictions. The economy did really well. And no politician knew how to deal with him because he wasn't anything that they'd encountered before. He just lied to their faces and he would belittle them. The comments that came out that he'd said, you know, the hot mic famous thing about him and models. I'm not going to say any more about that. And
the professionals did the models. I was never...
Greg, do not put it in because I want to keep the clean rating. But if not, that's the point. If it had been a hot mic moment for Margaret Thatcher, Ronald Reagan, any other politician, it would have destroyed their career. But he gets away with it. He gets away with it again and again and again. But why? Because these conservative people are being told, you've got problems in your life. I know what those problems are. I'm going to blame them on immigrants, which is a common thing that right-wing people tend to do. There are problems in the country. And look, depending on whatever flavor you want, if you're left-wing, Oh, there are problems in the country that are holding you back. What are they? They're special interests. They're corporations. Basically, you tell people what the problems are in their lives, and then you pick a target that you are comfortable attacking, and then you just keep attacking it. And then you turn around and say, I can fix the problem. Too much immigration in the country? I'm going to build a wall. That will secure your jobs. The immigrants are stealing your jobs. I'm going to stop the immigrants coming into the country. It makes logical sense. Trump did not invent this, but Trump, because of his business background, was very good at selling it and repeating it again and again and again. As the saying goes, repeat a lie often enough and it becomes the truth. The first problem with him was when it came to COVID, because now this was something he couldn't just lie about. He couldn't just put some spin on it and put a brave face on it. You cannot negotiate with a virus, and it was spreading everywhere. Now, in the case of Donald Trump, he's not the only governmental leader that allowed COVID into a country. Let's be clear on this. It was a pandemic. It started in China. It spread across the whole world. Oh, New Zealand did really well. Well, for starters, New Zealand's in the bottom of the map, isn't it? It's very easy to cut off from the rest of the world. Much harder to do it with somewhere like France or America. But also, when COVID did eventually come into the country, it was the Omicron variant, and it absolutely ravaged New Zealand because it hadn't encountered any other form. And yes, it did eventually come to even New Zealand. So let's not be too hard on Trump in terms of the fact that COVID arrived in America. But what happened was, at this point, his inadequacies just were obvious to all. He didn't know what to do. Now, again, a lot of the world didn't know what to do, but he didn't know what to do with the economy. He didn't know what to do with foreign policy, but he could obfuscate. But you can't obfuscate when people start dying. And there was the argument about the Diamond Princess cruise liner that had a big outbreak. He didn't want it to arrive in America because it would have put more numbers of COVID cases on America. It's like, that's not how a pandemic works. And right now it shows that you're worried about numbers more than human lives. And then we get to the biggest stock market. After him boasting about the stock market and the economy did grow under him, you then get the biggest stock market crash in American history ever. It beat the stock market crash of 1929. And by the time Trump leaves, the country is in an economic downturn, and 400,000 Americans have lost their lives through COVID. It is now everywhere. And 2020, because of the lockdowns, was just super edgy. Everybody was just constantly on the internet because there was nothing else to do. And so all of these moments, the Rayshard Brooks, the George Floyd type situations, really echoed around the world because they were there. They were filmed. And we saw the callous aftermath of that. And again, Trump not getting it. And so you play with fire, you whip people up, you appeal to their base moments, and you end up getting two impeachments, which is a record for any president of the United States, and then you get January 6th, which is subsequently tried to be misremembered, etc. It didn't cause the fact that five people died, that this is the first time in American history, Civil War included, where the Capitol was under siege by its own people, and democracy teetered on that day. And this is because of Donald Trump whipping up everybody. And so what we've got now, for every possible political norm, there's every reason to criticize him. But at the same time, he knows how to play the system. He says a comment, you get people covering it in various right-wing news, which gets reposted and retweeted and spread across the internet. And every time he's going to court, he uses it as a political standpoint. Joe Biden has generated far more money than Donald Trump during the election. But at the same time, Donald Trump is getting tens of millions of free advertising as everyone's writing about his various different days in court. And do you remember the whole bond for half a billion that then got dropped down to 175 million? The point is here, and this is where you have to watch yourself and your own biases. There are a lot of liberals, Democrats, left-leaning individuals who want to see the courts punish him. But at the same time, they kind of want the courts to get on with it. Well, if you're saying that it should be justice for all, then Trump is accorded all the same judicial support as anybody. And there can be arguments, and it is a valid argument, that trying to get a jury of 12 of his peers with no opinion on a previous president of the United States is hard. And that can lead to mistrials. So you better do it right, or the whole thing can get kicked out of court. Now, of course, Trump's going to say the whole thing's a witch hunt and blah, blah, blah. We all know that. But at the same time, he's allowed to say that. This is something else that's forgotten. Freedom of speech is not the same thing as freedom of agreement. And he's allowed to say this stuff, just as other people are allowed to say bad things about him. But it does mean that the Republicans are weirdly paralyzed. You have a man who lost an election. You had a man who lost the Senate majority. You had a man who also has done poor for congressional elections as well. Now, through a few quirks, Congress did end up going to Republican. But by any stretch of the imagination, any other first-time president who managed to fail all those different ways doesn't get even considered to run again. Just ask Jimmy Carter, for example. The point is, there are these minnows of politicians and presidents. And when people turn around and say, what's the worst? I find it annoying when you get things like, King Charles III will be the worst king ever. It's like, really? You know, his namesake had his head cut off and started two civil wars. That's worse, okay? Oh, you know, within living memory. That's not how monarchy works. But you get things like that with prime ministers and presidents, etc. It's like, whoa, if you're saying worst ever, you are allowed to look at the whole list. Now, up until the year 2020, I would have said Donald Trump is a disaster, but he didn't trigger anything as bad as James Buchanan, who was the president before the Civil War, and he led the country into Civil War. He's bottom. But I am going to argue now that if you're going to look at things, Donald Trump is the worst ever. Nobody else has been impeached twice. You get January 6th. It may not be a civil war, but it just shows you how polarized everything is. And this is the point we now need to look at, because America is in serious danger. You have certainty on both sides. And the problem with social media is it's made all of the world's democracies harden. I have voted for all of the major parties in the UK at certain points in my life, because I felt that they've been able to offer different things at certain times in my life, or made better sense at certain times in my life. And the problem with certainty is, for loads of reasons, Donald Trump is a pariah to the left. But if you're going to sit down with a Trump supporter and start off by that, going, look how idiot he is, he's a crook, he's a liar, and things like that, you're not going to win anybody over by saying that. Similarly, having Republicans turn around and claim that it's a witch hunt and they're not going to pay any attention to any of the laws. Republicans used to be law and order, to trust the police and trust the legislature. And now what, they're all corrupt? Some of the judges hearing Trump's cases were appointed by Trump. So, you know, what are you meant to do with that? You get these ridiculous comparisons to Jesus. Trump is not religious. And again, something the religious right doesn't get. Why can they follow a guy who's on his third marriage, who's never seen in church, because he gives them what they want? He gives them conservative, fundamentalist Christian, various electors and lawyers and even judges in different states, so that you end up getting abortion being outlawed in a variety of states, which plays well to the fundamentalist Christian base in America. And so he understands how the game works, whereas the Democrats are sometimes sitting on the sidelines going, that's not fair. Well, you're right, it's not fair. Care to do something about it? And the idea of Trump being, he quite often argues that he's got immunity. He is looking to the presidency, not as first of citizens of America, but as a king or queen, because he has a love of these dictators. He loves the idea of being able to get away with everything. The main reason he is running for president for a second time is because if he comes president, he can make all of these, or most of these, court cases disappear, go away against him. But if your main reason for running is to avoid prison time or avoid penalties, it's obviously not the right reason to be running as president. But meanwhile, you got Joe Biden, who is over 80 years old, running against him. Both parties had picked somebody younger. Probably both parties could have won. But Trump is such a divisive figure that I understand, and I'm kind of, what I find interesting when I do my training around the world, is the whole world, apart from America, is united in seeing Trump as a buffoon. If you're an American listening to this, he doesn't play well to the rest of the world. Ah, it doesn't matter, America first. Well, America does actually have to communicate with the rest of the world. It needs raw materials from the rest of the world. It sells to the rest of the world. So you can't ignore the rest of the world. In fact, America first would be able to create really strong trading partnerships with other parts of the world. So that's that. But the rest of the world, generally, I can talk about Donald Trump and it's not in any way controversial, but in America, it really is. And in the world of business, you don't want to reveal your political persuasion. I'll never forget, I was in Texas doing some training, and I was, first thing in the morning, I was just putting some stuff on a flip chart, and this woman walked in, and she said to me, oh, did you see Donald Trump on the TV last night? Well, I had, but of course, I don't know which way she's swaying, so the simplest thing was to say, no, I didn't. And her response, I'll never forget, was, oh, he showed them. Okay, fine, you're a Trump supporter. That doesn't mean I'm going to put any less effort into the training or see you in a different way. But the thing is, it's the fervor. Nobody is as enthusiastic for Joe Biden as Donald Trump. And so this is what I mean. You have to see him through the lens of entertainment. You have to see him through the lens of pop culture, mass media, whereas Joe Biden very much sits in the annals of political history. If he hadn't have won the last election, I'm sure there would have been a few very dry books about his career, and he probably would have retired, and nobody would have bought those books. But now he's become president of the United States. Somebody's going to write a book about you, and it's going to be interesting, and certainly the last 4 years have been very, very interesting. But we are now at a point where America's at a crossroads, and Trump could still win. I mean, the thing about all the polls is it almost doesn't matter. What matters is on the actual day. And so many things vary. If it hadn't been for COVID, it was likely that Trump would have had a second term, for example. So I'm not going to say who's going to win this time round, but the interesting fact is that if he does win, already the rest of the world is preparing themselves for this. And Trump is likely to get a rude awakening that he's not going to be warmly greeted in Europe. And Europe has already decided that it needs to sort out Ukraine, which is the right move. Why is everybody waiting in Europe for America to defend a part of Europe? Surely if Europe is a major player on the world stage, it should be able to defend its own interests on its own continent. That's not a controversial statement. So, yeah, he is a fascinating character. I don't actually think that he's evil. I think he's amoral. He's a complete narcissist. It's all about him. But do you know what? If you actually listen to him, some of his stuff may be odious, but he's funny. He knows how to entertain a crowd. He has charisma. But obviously what he stands for, this thing, he doesn't really stand for anything other than self-congratulation. If it wasn't such a dangerous time, he might be warmly remembered in the same style as someone like Charles II. Nobody's going to turn around and say he was a great king, but he was fun. And he was a bit of a playboy as well, much like Donald Trump. That's perhaps a better comparison than when people start comparing him flat out to Hitler, who was no fun, killed far more people, and his golf handicap wasn't as good. Anyway, what a terrible way to finish this. Look, my point here is this. You can absolutely, if you look at it from the cold light of day, to just completely denigrate him and say that he's a miserable failure is to undersell what he's actually been able to achieve. Now, he may have achieved it amorally, but he did do it. And at the same time, he's clearly trying to fill a hole. He hates being belittled. He is such a narcissist, which is usually a sign of covering something up. Daddy issues, who knows? I'm not a psychologist. But it's going to be very interesting to see, kind of terrifying to see what happens in November. But if he does win, well, the reality is the whole world has kind of adjusted in a way that it hadn't done in 2016. It will be different this time round. And it does show you that pop culture can influence social media, and social media can influence actual history, actual political history, because how many other bit players from Home Alone 2 have become president of the United States? Not even Macaulay Culkin managed to do that. That's it from me, and as always, another episode coming soon.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.